Michael Faraday, the man who invented the electric motor.
I learned only basic reading, writing, and arithmetic, but I changed the future of the world by discovering that electricity could be made by using magnets. I was born on the 22nd of September, 1791. My family lived in Newington Butts, which was a village close to London. My parents had 9 children, but as was not unusual, only 4 survived. My father, who was a blacksmith, couldn't work properly because he had health problems, and as a result, we were a family that was always fighting poverty. London was an overcrowded, dirty city, and the streets were full of disease and dirt. Unless you were rich, there was almost no medical help, and our living facilities, like those of all poor people, were basic. When it rained or snowed, damp covered everything, and the city was permanently covered in smoke from the fires that every house burned. It was not only money and health care that was lacking, but also a formal education. I was lucky enough to go to school, at least for long enough to learn the basics of writing and counting, but it was the Sunday school at the local church which helped me most. We would read the Bible, sing, and pray, all of which were good for disciplining the mind. Childhood ends early when you're poor, and when I was 13, it was time for me to start earning my living. There was a bookshop in Jacob Well Mews near our home that was owned by a Frenchman named Mr. Rebo. He offered me a job as an errand boy, running around doing jobs and making deliveries, and I met a lot of interesting people. After a year, Mr. Rebo offered to teach me bookbinding, and that was the start of my 7-year apprenticeship. While I was waiting for customers, there was plenty of time to read the books in the shop, particularly the ones on science. Mr. Rebo encouraged me to read Conversations on Chemistry, and I also had access to the Encyclopedia Britannica. Most of our customers were educated people, and some helped me, like the French artist who taught me how to draw. It was something that would prove valuable in my later work. Even though I had been brought up in a very religious family, I soon began to understand that science would provide the answers to the problems we were all facing rather than religion. However, the transition from believing in the importance of religion to believing in the importance of science was not an easy one for me. So my religious background stayed with me my whole life. One day, Mr. Rebo told me that a lecturer called Mr. Tatum was giving 4 talks on the subject of natural philosophy, and that I should go. My elder brother Robert had given me a shilling. There were 20 shillings in a pound, and I used it to pay to go to the talks. I met people, some who became friends and others who were useful to me professionally, and I tried to remember everything that Mr. Tatum said. A shilling was a lot to spend to listen to someone talking. However, it was the best shilling I ever spent because those lectures changed my life. The years passed and I was now 21. I had finished my bookbinding training and I was keen to learn more about science. I went to hear 4 more lectures, this time given by Sir Humphrey Davy, who was a chemist, and I was completely fascinated. Many mysteries of science were explained in the lectures, but a large number of questions still remained unanswered. I had made so many notes throughout the years, while I was reading in the shop and from the previous lectures I had been to, that I decided to make a book with them. Using my skills in bookbinding, I made a 300-page leather-bound book. I sent one copy to Sir Joseph Banks, who was famous as the botanist who had travelled with the great explorer Captain Cook. But to my great disappointment, he didn't even reply. This didn't stop me, however, and I sent another copy to Sir Humphrey Davy. This time, my efforts were successful, and Sir Humphrey Davy invited me to meet him. Our meeting went well, and he gave me a temporary job as his assistant. This was an amazing opportunity for me to learn about exciting experiments. Some of them were quite risky, as they could be dangerous, but it was the start of great new adventures. The next year, Sir Humphrey Davy asked me to go with him on a lecture tour of Europe. At that time, Emperor Napoleon was the ruler in France. He did not like the English, but luckily for us, he liked Sir Humphrey Davy. Sir Humphrey's great work on chemistry was recognised in France, and Napoleon provided us with documents that allowed us to travel around Europe safely. We toured France, Italy, Switzerland, Germany and Holland, spending 18 months on rough roads, travelling through wind, rain and sun. It was my job to write down everything that was said in the lectures, and it proved to be the kind of education that one cannot get from books. As well as seeing many countries and meeting such a wide variety of people, I also met some influential people who would be able to help me in the future. My head was full of the knowledge I gained about science, culture, language, history, geography, and of course, life. On our return to London, I knew I had a lot to do. I met many new friends, and, growing in confidence, I gave my first lecture in 1816. This was the start of a new age as the European wars came to an end, and we celebrated our victory at the Battle of Waterloo on the 18th of June, 1815, when Napoleon's army was defeated. I had met many beautiful young women in the countries we visited, but I met my future wife after I returned home. Her name was Sarah Barnard, and we met at the church I regularly went to. We got married on the 2nd of June, 1821. Happy at home, my energies went back into my work, and I started a long career in science. For the next 45 years, I researched and taught at the Royal Institution, all the while making sure I followed all the new developments at home and overseas. In Denmark, it was found that an electric current created a magnetic field, an area in which the push and pull of a magnet can be felt, and electromagnetism was born. I wondered if the reverse could be true. Was it possible that electricity could be created from magnetism? In the next few months, I worked on building an electric motor. It was a very basic system with a magnet, a chemical battery, and some wire. When the current flowed, the wire turned the magnet round. Many thought the idea was just for fun and couldn't see how it could be used. Sir Humphrey Davy seemed annoyed and claimed the idea was his, but to me it was just one of many experiments. By 1823, my reputation as a scientist was rising as I managed to turn the chemical element chlorine into liquid and discovered the chemical compound benzene. In 1824, I was elected to the Royal Society. Sadly, the only person who objected to this was Sir Humphrey Davy. Remembering how, as a young man, attending my first lectures had changed my life, I started the Christmas lectures, and I helped to provide electricity for lighthouses, which saved countless lives at sea. Between 1830 and 1851, I was also Professor of Chemistry, and spent time giving lectures at the Royal Military Academy in Woolwich in London. I was busy doing many experiments, and it seemed likely that I was about to make a big breakthrough. I did. On the 29th of August, 1831, I was able to give a demonstration as to how an electric transformer worked. A transformer was a piece of equipment that changed one kind of electrical force to another. The following month, there was another success. The principle of electromagnetic induction became clear to me. Two wires were attached to a copper disc, which was turned round in a horseshoe magnet. It sounds simple, but it was the first electric generator, leading to the invention of direct electric current. This literally lit up the world, and led the way for the creation of an alternative power to steam. It was a time of high creativity, and it was as if the secrets of the heavens were being opened for me to see. In 1833, a sponsor, Mr. Fuller, provided money for research, and as a result, I became the Fullerian Professor of Chemistry at the Royal Institution of Great Britain. Other work led to the creation of important laws, and a whole new language was required to explain the new developments. Words like cathode and electrode and iron had to be defined, and dictionaries had to explain terms like electromagnetism and transformers. Politicians and businessmen asked my views on social and business issues, and the British government asked me to serve on committees. Each one was a major project, whether it was industrial pollution in Swansea in Wales, air pollution in London, or sewage and the very bad smell from the River Thames, also in London. All of them were terrible problems because of their effects on people's lives and health. There were pleasanter projects when I worked on the Great Exhibition of 1851 and helped the National Gallery to protect their art collection. I met many people who invited me to work on other projects, and time flew by. The problem was that I had less time to contribute to science, so I focused on writing the book Chemical Manipulation, my scientific articles, and a regular diary. The work was demanding and exciting, but then I began to feel unwell. Worry and stress took over my life so much that I became ill with a nervous breakdown. It was 6 years before I could focus on work again. When I did return, I invented what was called the Faraday effect. I looked at the impact of magnetic fields on light waves, which convinced me there was a single universal force. My religious beliefs were still very important to me, but there was no scientific proof of the single force. Was it a force of God or of nature, or both? How did it operate? I wanted desperately to think about these issues, but once again, my health prevented further efforts, and I became confused and anxious. At the age of 64, I started to suffer from senility, a condition that makes old people confused and behave in a strange way. Queen Victoria, who was the Queen of Britain from 1837 until 1901, was kind and offered me a cottage at one of the royal palaces, Hampton Court. She also offered me a knighthood, which I turned down, preferring to remain just plain Michael Faraday. I didn't need the title, Sir. Seeing my work recognised was enough of a reward. I never saw electric lights in homes and electric power in medicine and business, because in 1867 I died. However, I had been so fascinated by chemistry, physics and electronics and the power they held, that I was sure technology in the future would be far greater than I could ever dream about.